prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a really important show for you today. We've done so many shows over the past 14 years about the ketogenic diet, the value of ketones, and we know that ketones in and of themselves have some special magic that needs to be paid attention to. Today we're going to be talking about something called the Veatch ketone ester, why it's different, why it's something you should consider including in your dietary intake. Before we do that, we of course have to pay homage to the folks over at Legendary Foods. They are our title sponsor. They make this show possible. And of course, if you go to eatlegendary.com, use the coupon code SHR, you'll save 10% off your entire purchase. Make sure you let them know that Carl sent you. Show them some love. They are a fantastic company. Their Tasty Pastry is basically a Pop-Tart that has less than 1 gram of sugar, 3 to 4 grams of impact carbohydrates, and 9 grams of high-quality protein. Buy them for your kids. They don't have to know that they're actually good for them. And, of course, when you eat them, you will feel guilty, but you're really not cheating. And that's the exciting part of that story. So, okay, without further delay, let me bring my guest on. That's Frank Yosa. How you doing, Frank?
Good. Thanks for having me on the show.
My pleasure. So, let me get that background removed. Just 1 second. This is a brand new, no, not yours. The one on my screen. This is a brand new video platform I'm using. So I'm still learning my way around it.
All right.
So we first heard about ketone esters quite some time ago. Well, first of all, you can't talk about the ketogenic diet without talking about exogenous ketones, ketones from outside. That you are taking, that your body is not producing. So let's start off with the notion and the value of ketones in general for a second. How about that?
Okay, so super high level, the ketogenic diet is when someone consumes 80% fat, 15% protein, 5% carbs, which is just a mind-boggling amount of fat. People, you know, they think that they're doing the ketogenic diet, but they're really not, because you really need 80%, and that's where a lot of people make a mistake. And once you are in a ketogenic diet, by eating those ratios or by fasting for multiple days, your body will go into this emergency mode where it says, uh-oh, you know, we don't have enough fuel, enough glucose. So then it starts to go to your fat stores and starts to burn fat to make beta-hydroxybutyrate, one of the three main ketones. And that ketone will then fuel your body, whether it's your mind, your muscles, whatnot. And that's what the ketogenic diet does. And that's endogenous production, which is your body making its own ketones and burning fat. Exogenous ketones is when you drink it externally, and you're drinking that same molecule, that same beta-hydroxybutyrate ketone molecule, but you're drinking it externally. And what has been shown is you get many of the same benefits as a ketogenic diet, but not all the same benefits. And hopefully we'll talk about that, because it's not the same thing. You're not burning fat because you magically drink this drink, even though the competitors might, you know, make for splashy headlines saying that, it's not something that I agree with.
Let's talk about two terms, okay? So ketosis is a biological phenomenon of starvation, where the body starts to create ketones because they're an alternate substrate for energy that the brain, the heart, and really, more importantly than anything else, the brain uses, but the muscles can use as well. Ketolysis is the utilization of ketones in the process of building, developing energy. So the reality is that drinking a ketone, regardless of whether it's bound to a mineral or whether it's an ester, doesn't really put you in ketosis. It actually puts you into ketolysis, because making those ketones. The process of and you know, I've had this discussion with lots of people on the show who is selling ketone supplements. And they want, oh, no, you technically you are in ketosis at that moment. No, it's kind of like, okay, I have $500,000 in the bank that I earned, or I have $500,000 in the bank that I won in a lottery. I can't say I earned it because I won it. So yeah. I can stay. It all spends the same, but they're very different origins.
Very different. And it makes for better marketing to say, drink this drink. You can hold up, you know, let's see, prove it. Well, might say that. Drink this drink. This is a competitor's product. Drink this drink and you'll be in ketosis in 30 minutes, 60 minutes, you know, whatever the number is. It just makes for great headlines. And it's even more confusing because a lot of the scientific papers actually use this phrase nutritional ketosis to define, you know, exogenously consumed ketones. Well, they're not marketing people and they don't realize the damage that they're causing, the confusion that it's causing. I think it should just be called exogenous ketosis, you know, ketosis derived exogenously, or endogenous ketosis. Keep them separate, because the number of phone calls that I get that, you know, they like to say, oh yeah, I'm taking your drink and I'm in ketosis. I'm like, I can't let you continue with that sentence because it is very different.
And the reality is you're not burning fat if you're taking an exogenous ketone, because your body doesn't have to break down the fat to right. make the ketones.
Right. Yeah. So they're trying to skip a step, and we don't even recommend using exogenous ketones or even ketone ester when first entering into a ketogenic diet. If you're a first timer on a ketogenic diet, we tell people don't use our exogenous ketone unless maybe if you have a doctor or a nutritionist that can advise you. Why? Because 80% of people mess up. So when they mess up, who are they going to blame? Oh, they're going to blame this magical drink. Well, it didn't do it for me.
Well, when you say mess up, they don't lose weight. They don't necessarily lose weight.
Weight, or they take the wrong amount of electrolytes. They get the keto flu, and then they feel worse for 2 weeks. And they say, "Oh, it just didn't sit well with me. It wasn't compatible with my body." All the excuses that come up when people make mistakes on a ketogenic diet: eating too much protein, not testing your blood ketones, only testing urine strips. You know, all these mistakes. It's all going to come back to my product, you know, blaming me.
So there's another thing that I take issue with. In the keto industry. So I will say often on my show that any diet that produces ketones is a ketogenic diet. For instance, if I eat less than 30 or 40 grams of carbs a day, but I eat a lot of protein and I'm producing 1.6 millimoles a day, I'm in ketosis. You can't say, no, you've got to eat. So the other thing that you know, there are therapeutic ketogenic diets that are used for seizures where you have to really eat a lot of fat. And you have to get the blood levels of ketones up high. But the reality is that anybody who observes even an overnight 12-hour fast, like I stop eating at 6 p.m. and I don't eat again till the next morning or post-workout, depends on what I'm doing. And I've checked my blood. I mean, when I wake up in the morning, I'm 1.1, 1.3 millimoles of ketones just from the overnight fast. So,
and that's from keto eating the night before or regular eating?
No, regular eating.
Okay, well, that's unusual. It's a little bit on the higher side. Most people, you know, if they're not eating keto, they'll wake up with that time span, 0.5 would be on the
high side. But see, I'm a low-carb guy, and I've been doing intermittent fasting for a decade now.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'm very metabolically flexible. In fact, the other day, Elisa and I worked in the yard. We did something heroic. We literally rearranged and cleaned the garage because I just got a new motorcycle and I needed a place to park it. And we worked for 9 hours straight, and I was 26 hours fasted by the time we were done. I wasn't hungry.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, so I'm very metabolically flexible. I can go for long periods of time, but that's because I have been doing this for so long that my body starts to produce ketones pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But back to my assertion, if you're producing ketones on a vegan diet, you're in ketosis.
Yeah, I actually am vegan keto. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
I'm vegan keto, but am I eating 80%, 15.5? Probably not, but I wake up every morning with, you know, between 0.5 and 1.0, so it's keto. You can technically have a ketogenic diet just eating sugar. If you just ate 3 grams of sugar and that's all you ate for the entire day,
right.
that's ketogenic.
Right.
So
thank you. Yeah. Thank you. So getting back to the assertion that producing ketones – getting back to the assertion that using exogenous ketones will help stimulate weight loss, they may extrinsically stimulate weight loss if they allow you to fast longer.
Right. So indirectly, you know, so some of these advertisements that say this one liner of, you know, losing weight or put you in a ketosis, if it helps you do, let's say, one meal a day fasting where you otherwise could not do it, and you took it in the morning, 10 a.m., and you took it again at 3 p.m., or you were able to take it once and help you go all the way to dinner, sure. But it's the intermittent fasting that's making you lose weight, not the exogenous ketones not making you lose weight. And my wife even said that I can't sell this as a weight loss product until she loses weight on it. And the problem that she has is she tries to do a ketogenic diet, but then sometimes when the ketone esters come in, it's kind of, you know, she might lax her diet a little bit more, and then, you know, that backfires. So the diet is just as important. And if you think that this thing, this supplement that you take is going to do it all for you, it's just not going to work. It still requires hard work. And I think there's a lot to weight loss that's mental. And if you put all of your eggs into the basket of this bottle, this supplement, and not go to the root of the problem, which is your brain and just cravings, and yes, it's hard, and empowering to not eat for a day or two is pretty empowering. It shows your power over food, that food does not control you. That part, you know, the exogenous ketones won't help and can actually hurt, because you're, if you don't lose weight, you're blaming the drink. It's the drink's fault. It's not me. It takes hard work.
Why do you say exogenous ketones for first timers is a mistake when they're going keto?
Well, when they're going keto, because they make mistakes. So there's the common mistakes are not enough salt intake. Initially, people will lose 5 pounds of weight when they go keto, and they love it because, hey, I just lost 5 pounds. No, it's misleading. It's all water weight. Why? Because every molecule of glucose is attached to a molecule of water. And when you lose your glucose, water just comes flushing out of your system, 5 pounds of it. And first of all, you should throw away your scale, because that losing 5 pounds is going to mess you up mentally, and then your hormones get messed up even more. But so with the water that's lost, massive amounts of salt is lost with it. We're talking, if I told you to take salt pills, I think I got some right here, it'd be like, you know, a third of this bottle, 20 salt pills that you would need every day to replenish your salt. But people don't do that because that sounds crazy. And if you don't replenish your salt, you don't have enough metal going through your body with water and just conducting electricity. So then you start getting brain fog, you get lethargic. So those are the mistakes people make. They eat too much protein. Protein turns into carbs when you eat too much.
Wait. That's not an accurate statement, but I get where you're going. So protein, certain amino acids in protein, like leucine, like glycine, they are highly glucogenic. And if the body wants glucose, it can make that glucose from protein. But saying proteins turn into carbs, carbohydrate is a macronutrient. It could turn into glucose, but it's not going to turn into pasta. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I'm referring to gluconeogenesis.
Yes.
If the 15% is the recommended amount, the number two mistake behind salt is eating 30, 40, 50% protein, because they just load up on meat as opposed to loading up on the oil.
But we've done shows that show that that's really something people don't need to worry about. In other words, gluconeogenesis. I don't eat a lot of fat per se. I eat the fat that comes along with the meat and stuff that I eat, the fish. But my blood sugar in the morning is 67. So it's not like my body, your body will produce the glucose that it needs through gluconeogenesis. But gluconeogenesis is a very expensive process to the body. It's a lot of work for the body to produce it. It usually only does it during starvation, and we hope we're not starving.
The ketogenic diet is kind of like a starvation of carbs.
Yes.
So I'm referring to when you're trying to enter into keto, when you're trying to get your blood ketones in the morning between 0.5 and 1.5, and they're scratching their head saying it's not working. Either they feel bad, that's one problem, which is the salt, or it's not working, my ketones aren't getting high enough. And then you evaluate how much protein they have, and oftentimes the protein is double what it should be, and that kicks them out of ketosis in the morning.
Right.
So by taking the exogenous ketones for the first time while trying to do keto, just 80-90% of people do it wrong and mess up. And then I've just found that, you know, the number one returns of the product are, you know, the five people that tried to do a ketogenic diet and said, oh, it didn't work. And they were just messing up on the ketogenic diet. It's hard. It's hard to do it right.
Samurai Jack says, when doing a keto and intermittent fasting, do you suggest a carb reload day? Do you believe in that?
I don't believe in carb reloads. And, you know, there might be science out there that says every year, 2 years, every couple months reloading. I've never reloaded. I feel dumber when I eat, you know, glucose, eat a cake. I don't look at a cake and crave it. I don't agree with the idea of reloading. Now, my wife goes in and out, you know, every few months, and then, you know, she'll be super productive for, you know, for a couple of weeks and go back.
Well,
out.
Now women are different. And, you know, right. Look, women actually are factories that make other human beings. So when we look at their dietary needs, their body is always trying to protect the probability that they may get pregnant. And so women, I know women who go too low in carbohydrates who then see thyroid changes. They will see, they will become very hypothyroid. So I've learned on this show after 14 years not to say generalizations when it comes to nutrition, because there are people out there. But if you feel like, you know, Dr. Mauro DiPasquale wrote the first book about the keto diet 35 years ago. He called it the phase shift diet. And it was actually for athletes. It was called the metabolic diet. And he believed in a 5-day keto approach, and on the weekends you could carb reload, carb refeed, he used to call it. But it was, you didn't go crazy. You didn't go like, okay, I'm just going to eat pizza and pasta for 2 days. You small amounts
of
carbs.
I'll talk to that. I thought you meant the reloading, which is where you go. The other type of reloading is when you're keto for 2 or 3 or 4 months. You go keto for a week. You go, you know, off of keto, and then you come back. But the concept of the 5-day keto and 2 days off, I hate that. I absolutely hate that. I think that's the horrible. It takes a good solid 2 weeks to just get into ketosis, let alone, you know, 5 days. So I have seen people do this before. They go keto for 5 days, and then they, right when they're, it's like a battery in your system that has glycogen. Right when your glycogen finally gets to zero, it's just starting to work, you're going to top off the battery and start all over again. It defeats the point. So that 5 days keto and 2 days off, they just started to have the benefits, and then they killed it by going off. So I don't agree with that.
Interesting. Okay, let me take this down. So let's talk a little bit, and we've got lots of comments coming up. We'll get to everything, I promise you. So let's talk more about ketone salts versus ketone esters. So in the beginning, it was all ketone salts, thanks to people like Dominic D'Agostino and Patrick Arnold leading the way, binding BHB to minerals. But then the ketone esters showed up, and these were a much more efficient, exclusive delivery. And I remember Pat Arnold telling me, I hope somebody doesn't introduce a ketone ester. This is like, I don't know, maybe 8 years ago, seven, 8 years ago. But explain the difference between a ketone salt and a ketone ester.
All right. So when your body burns fat, it makes this molecule called D-beta hydroxybutyric acid. So it's acidic. And you can't drink that drink by itself because it's just way too acidic. We're talking 1.2 pH, just way too acidic. So what the solution that many companies on Amazon, there's maybe 100 of them selling ketone salts, they'll take this beta hydroxybutyric acid and then they'll combine a base, a salt. So people think of salt, they only think of sodium, but salt is actually sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium. So they'll attach those to bring the base up so that you can consume it. But the problem with So that's one of the differences. The ketone salt is with a base. A ketone ester combines that beta hydroxybutyric acid with another molecule called D13-butanediol, which happens to be a grape flavoring molecule. And ironically, that 13-butanediol, when you consume it, goes into the liver and converts to beta hydroxybutyrate. So you have, when it gets into the body, you start with beta hydroxybutyrate that goes directly into the blood. And then a, you know, second time release of 1,3-butanediol that goes to the liver and makes beta hydroxybutyrate, very similar to MCT oil, C8 oil. And I love it when I hear someone say, oh, I don't use exogenous ketones, and then they're chugging C8.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much an exogenous ketone, even though you're not exactly directly consuming. People think that drinking C8 MCT oil is burning, that they're burning fat. No, not really. They're consuming something that converts to beta hydroxybutyrate, but only 15% of the calories in MCT oil convert to beta hydroxybutyrate, whereas 70% of the 1,3-butanediol converts to beta hydroxybutyrate.
So how long does it take for that process? So you, if I take the product that you sell is called ketoneaid.com is the website. And just for the record, I'm getting nothing to do this interview, but those of you who go to that website and use the code SHR, you'll get a secret surprise discount that I can't say on the air. Let's just leave it that way. But so if I drink that, obviously the first wave of ketones enters my bloodstream how quickly from the start?
Within 15 minutes.
Okay. That second wave that takes first pass liver exchange to occur, how long does that happen?
Well, the peak is at 45 minutes. We're not able to determine by testing the blood ketones where the ketones came from, but the peak is at 45 minutes, and then it goes down for the next hour, which actually you're bringing up a topic that I've actually never talked about in a podcast, which is people are chasing these ketones in their blood when they take exogenous ketones, but they don't realize that the ketones don't do anything in the blood. It's when they get out of the blood and go to the muscles and go to the brain that it actually starts to do something. So just because it tailed off doesn't mean it's just starting in the system. And there was a recent human trial on brains where they actually were able to test the ketones in the brain. And even though at 45 minutes, the blood ketones started to go down, they were still peaking at 90 minutes in the brain.
Which means that they are stored in tissue then. They're stored in tissue until the tissue is ready to use them.
I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor, and I won't pretend. So I don't know exactly where it's stored or how that works, but they were somehow able to detect that it was in the brain at 90 minutes, but they stopped the test. I wish they would have seen, you know, how long it really lasts in there. And some people have told to take less of my product because they're chasing these numbers, 1.0, 2.0, and they want to be, you know, stabilized at that entire rate. And I said, you know, you don't really need that. You can do that with the diet. If you eat the diet, you're going to be, you know, stabilized, except for when you eat, it's going to fluctuate a little bit. But the exogenous, it gets into your system, and you don't have to be chasing those numbers so much. But back to the ketone salts, the second problem with the ketone salts is that they are what's called racemic. And Dr. Veach, he passed away a month ago. He's the inventor of all this stuff, worked in NIH for 40 years under Krebs, the Krebs cycle. And you know, he said that he wouldn't touch the racemic ketone salts with a 10-foot pole.
But in all fairness, because he discovered this. So, I mean,
he started with the ketone salts.
Right. No, I understand that. But then when he came out with the V-Chester.
Right. But he started with the ketone salts that were always non-racemic. So there is a version of the ketone salts, which I can talk about which competitors have that.
Please.
That is 100% bioavailable. But most of them, 90% of the stuff on Amazon is racemic. So it has both the D form and the L form, and the body can only use the D form, but the L form is wasted, but still has that same mineral load. So we're talking about massive quantities. So this is a racemic ketone salt, and the total salt load on the back is almost 2 grams of salt. And I'm all for, you know, loading up your salt when you're entering a ketogenic diet, and some people will turn to these racemic salts, and they think that it's the ketones that are helping them, but it's just the salt.
Right.
Save a whole bunch of money, buy some, you know, salt tablets, and it's the salt that they're feeling. Which is why after 2 weeks on the ketogenic diet, taking racemic ketone salts, they say, hey, it stopped working. I can't put my ring on anymore. Why is that? It's because your body stabilized, didn't need that salt load, and now you're just, you know, inflamed. So most of the products are racemic. But Dr. Veach, when he did his initial testing, was still doing non-racemic salts, so the D form only. But still, he thought that there wasn't enough energy creation, which is why he then progressed to the ketone esters.
How can you determine? So, how is there a way that somebody can look at a label of a ketone salt and know whether or not it's racemic?
Indirectly, if it's the opposite, if they didn't go out of their way saying that it's the D form or the R form, it's like a metric system. Either the D or the R form, it costs the ketone ester would cost 10 times more on the D form, but the ketone salts might cost 100% more. The company is going to go out of their way and label it D or R because it's just wildly more expensive.
Right.
The absence of labeling D and R, it is racemic. It just is. They're not going to spend twice as much for the starting material, which all comes from China. We make our stuff in the U.S. comes from China. They're going to want to put on their label that, hey, this stuff is higher purity. And what they do is they put here, you know, 11,000 milligrams or 11 grams, but it's racemic.
It's only 5.5 grams of really what you want.
5.5, but then there's also some evidence that the excess salt load might block some of that, and then the L might block some of that, so that 11 grams is effectively more like 4.5 grams. So what really matters is you know, what's my cost to raise my millimolars? You know, what's your goal? 0.5, 1.0? And it should be the cost per one millimolar rise. So people think that ketone ester is expensive. Someone even on a podcast said that, oh, I've got to mortgage my house to buy ketone esters. And what they're misunderstanding is, you know, we started off with this drink for Tour de France athletes because they were taking it secretly for 5 years and they take the entire amount. And sure, it's $30 for this bottle. But then our actual customers started only taking a cap full. And the cap full is only $2.50 worth. And they were getting a 0.5. You know, some women might get a 1.0 millimolar rise. So when you break it down on a cost for effectiveness, it's actually fairly similar without the massive salt load of the ketone salts.
Now some of them are exclusively sodium and calcium, and the ones that I like preferably that I've used in the past that are ketone salt based are the ones that are quad salts. You know, they have magnesium, potassium, sodium, and calcium.
Yeah.
Any opinions on that? Am I making a mistake? Should I just stick with the ones that are sodium and calcium?
No. So the way that sodium works versus potassium, the downside is that potassium is twice as weak as sodium to buffer it. So you have to actually have, you know, 200 milligrams of sodium for every 100 milligrams of 200 milligrams of potassium for 100 milligrams of sodium. So you have to pick your poison. Would you rather have 2x of potassium and have more potassium in there and lower sodium? Or do you want to just keep the total salt load to be as low as possible? I do like the idea of spreading them across all four because there are some synergies, you know, with them. So I do agree with that. Some people try to sell a product that is low in sodium or sodium free, and people think of that as salt free, which is confusing, but all they're doing is moving all the salt to the other ones. And magnesium, if you get too high, you'll have diarrhea. Calcium can create kidney stones at super high amounts. So you really want to balance it, which is why, this is a good segue, we took our average customer taking KE4, the ketone ester, which is 50% ketone ester, they were only taking 2 capfuls. So what we did is we made a new product that put that amount of ketones into a ready-to-drink bottle so you're not measuring out capfuls. But then we made it half ketone ester, and then half of it was what we call a reduced salt ketone salt. So it makes it much more palatable. It's already diluted. It's only $5 or $6 a drink as opposed to this, you know, mind-boggling $30 a drink. And we do the quad salts. We do 135 milligrams of sodium, 135 potassium, calcium 40, magnesium 60. So we do spread them across.
And I like that because you need all of these minerals in your blood, in your body. So I don't have a name here because this person has a privacy setting on Facebook, but it says, too bad esters taste like burnt garbage. The first time I had esters, I was in California at a meeting at Quest Nutrition, and they had this big gallon jug of it, and it did taste pretty bad. I mean, I felt like I was drinking paint lacquer. That's what it tasted like to me.
Yeah, I think one flavoring expert said that this was absolutely the worst molecule that they've ever tasted, and man couldn't make something taste worse. So let's talk about the history of taste. So initially, Peter Attia was on a Tim Ferriss podcast talking about how he got this drink. He did not follow the directions on how to mask the flavor, so he just took it straight. And he had this vision of, oh my God, it's 6 a.m., and if I have to throw this up on the kitchen counter, I'm going to have to, you know, hopefully my kids won't wake up and see me eating it off of the counter because it's so expensive that
I'm not going to leave. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So this image is just ingrained into people's heads. So a few things. He didn't follow the instructions on diluting it. So, and the flavor masking with some sweetener, you know, non-caloric sweetener. But that was also synthetically made. It was just very, very chemical process. The current process is actually all natural. Prove It claims, you know, that they're the first and only all-natural ketone product. It's just not true. We've been making it that way from the beginning. All fermented just like beer and wine. It's all natural. So that, first of all, tastes significantly better than the synthetic stuff. And then we dilute it with, you know, 50% water in our flagship product, and then adding just a minimal amount of stevia, no carbs. People actually say that it's quote unquote not bad, but we still recommend people will do a splash of water to dilute it. I still dilute it. My wife takes it straight and thinks that I'm a wimp for diluting it. I don't like the taste straight, but some people have liked it. The new drink that is 6 times more diluted and it has some ketone salt in it, I mean, it tastes, I mean, I won't say like a Gatorade, but it is, you know, pretty close. The flavor issue has been solved. It no longer taste like burnt rubber, especially the new drink that's mixed with the ketone salts. It's not even an issue anymore.
So we have to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we've got more questions. We've got some comments piling up as well. We'll get to everybody's questions. If you have questions about ketone esters, I've tried them, and they're not terrible. They almost taste a little bit like a really powerful black cherry.
Yeah. Did you take the new one or the strong concentrated one? And did you do?
I tried both of them. I tried the other one. The other one I was able to just shoot down. The one that's part salts and part ester. I mean, I just shot that down. But the other one, the way I was measuring.
Yeah, the one you're measuring, you have to put it in a splash of water, dilute it a little bit, because otherwise it's a 50% concentration. And just like the ketone salts, they recommend 10 ounces of water. If you put it in half of an ounce of water and you try and drink that, you have to put apples and apples. Half an ounce of water, you're eating an ocean.
But it wasn't terrible. It wasn't terrible. I mean, I've tasted worse things. Yeah. So it's not like as though I gagged or anything like that. And I went through a couple bottles of it, and Elisa did too. She used a lot less than me. I was using like 15. What is that measuring thing that you send, the 15?
It's 50 mLs for the wide tube. You might have gotten the skinny tube, which is 15 mLs.
Yeah, yeah. So I took 15 whenever I took it.
That's a lot.
And I liked it. But I'm more interested in the longevity value of ketones. And that's sure. Because we've done a lot of shows on the value of the what ketones do as signaling molecules and how they affect ATP and NAD. So let's talk about that when we come back, okay?
All right, sure.
All right, the website is KetoneAid, KetoneAid.com. I'm not getting anything for doing this interview. I'm just fascinated by this stuff. And as a result, if you go there and use the code SHR, you'll get some sort of secret discount. We can't talk about it. All right, be right back. Do you remember those delicious toaster pastries you had when you were a kid? You know, the rectangular sugar-filled snacks? Well, guess what? Legendary Foods has just made low-carb toaster pastry. This is the first of its kind, and honestly, these things are amazing. They have 3 to 4 net carb, less than 1 gram of sugar, and 9 grams of protein. You can eat them right out of the wrapper or lightly toast them. The only question is, which flavor? Strawberry or brown sugar cinnamon? They're available at eatlegendary.com and Amazon.
Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
Hey, this is Carl. For 14 years, you've heard me talk about Cansee eye drops, and they being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at now 61 years old. But I regularly get emails and messages from people who've been using Cansee and having some amazing results. Recently, I got an email from a fellow named Chad, who because he was on dexamethasone eye drops for over 6 months, developed a cataract. Cansee eye drops actually reduced my cataract to the point where even my doctor has a hard time finding it. I will never stop using Cansee eye drops twice a day. I've been using them since 2008, he says. And you should be too. There is no better way to keep your eyes healthy and seeing clearly than Cansee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com today and get on board, and we will both be looking into the future with very clear vision.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Are you a fan of the low-carb lifestyle? Having trouble getting fat adapted on your keto diet? Feel like your digestion has stalled? Now there's CAPEX. CAPEX increases fat loss and energy on any low-carb, no-carb diet, all while improving digestion. CAPEX boosts AMPK in muscles by 52% and fat cells by 300%. CAPEX increases ATP in your liver by 22%, a key part of energy production, all while revving up the fat-burning hormone adiponectin by a whopping 248%. Nothing works like CAPEX, and now you can get CAPEX for up to 42% off by going to kenergize.com/SHR and choosing one of the purchase options and using the code SHR. That's kenergize.com/SHR and code SHR.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. I don't know why my camera isn't showing up. It's being persnickety. Here, let's see something. Hold on. Oh, this is great. Can you can you hear me, Frank?
I can hear you perfectly.
Okay, but nobody has to see my ugly mug anyway. For some reason, my camera is frozen. It'll come back. But anyway, so that was my friend Tony Pekus, who actually posted that comment about it tasting like burnt garbage. And he was the guy that we used to drink this stuff out of that jug when we were over at Quest, because he was at Quest too. So let's talk a little bit about the...
It's come a long way. I've got to send him some, see what he thinks.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the longevity study that was done by Dr. Veach. Talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So that came out a couple of years ago. And what he did, it was a review paper. Actually, no, they might have done a test on mice. They reviewed five papers that talked about longevity in different animals, whether it be mice, dogs, and they did longevity testing through caloric restriction. And each one of these papers had a different conclusion as to why they thought, or hypothesis of why they thought that the animal was living longer. And to make a long story short, that longevity paper that he did basically said, you all missed the point. It was the ketones, stupid. It was the ketones in that caloric restriction environment. It was the ketones that got produced, and that's what led to the longevity. And they did test this with mice, where they gave them ketones, and they didn't even put them on a ketogenic diet. They actually took the normal mice chow, which is 70% carbs, and I don't know what the rest is, but it doesn't really matter. And they dropped that 70 down to either 40 or 50% carbs, so still high carbs, and gave ketone ester in the feedstock. And what they found was the mice lived longer with the presence of ketones. But I still think that the presence of ketones is still only half of the equation that they haven't looked at. Half of the equation is increasing ketones, but the other half of the equation, and maybe even more important, is lowering the carbs. So I'd be very interested if they redid that study and kept the sugar, especially fast carbs, as low as possible, not as low as possible, but just much lower, whether that increased longevity even more. So I think sugar is impairing longevity just as much as ketones may be increasing longevity.
Sorry, I had to kill my mic so I could restart my camera. So I actually did a show in 2006 that showed, and this was the first of its kind, that it's glucose signaling that causes cellular senescence. So now, we've come all this way 14 years later and we realize, senescent cells, that's the key to, aging and disease states. And well, guess what? Sugar causes senescent cells. But interestingly enough, ketones have a unique effect. They, in fact, increase insulin sensitivity, do they not?
Well, it lowers blood sugar consistently across the board. As far as insulin, I don't know exactly how it affects insulin because it's different whether it's a person that is not moving versus a person that's on a bicycle doing a performance. It varies. So I'm not really up to date on the insulin effect, but the glucose effect, which is actually one of the problems when you take too much exogenous ketones or too much ketone ester specifically, it actually lowers blood glucose and can impair performance, which is why we don't suggest people do it game day. But we'll go into sports in a second.
Because I just put this up, conflicting papers on sports performance. Right. So the reality is a lot of people probably would benefit from taking less than they use in the way of ketone esters or even non-racemic ketone salts,
right?
Because they're plummeting blood. You do need some blood glucose. You need it. I think a lot of people take ketones and expect to feel what they feel from caffeine, like energized, and they don't. In fact, sometimes they feel kind of washed out. Maybe they're just taking too much.
Well, yes. So you touched upon the caffeine. So let's nail that real quickly. So with caffeine, most of the ketone salts that are sold with caffeine. Why do they do that?
So you feel something.
So you feel something. And what happens is the ketones multiply that caffeine effect. There are some studies that show that the caffeine may, you know, increase the ketones in your blood. Not quite sure about that.
But that's in the face of a ketogenic diet. In other words, if you're eating high fat, very low carbohydrates, and you use caffeine, there seems to be an increase in the liver's ability to put out more ketones.
Okay.
But that's not going to affect you if you're drinking ketones.
Maybe, probably not, but I haven't tested it, so you know, I don't know. But when people say that they drank a ketone salt and they really felt it, the first thing I ask is, did it have caffeine in it? Mm-hmm. And what you felt was the caffeine being multiplied, not the ketone ester. Because the ketone ester, when people take just ketone ester, they say it's hard to explain. That's like the first line out of their mouth. And they try to explain it as a more of a calming energy, kind of like a ninja. So they're energetic, but yet they're calm and focused and ready for the task. So it's drastically different. Now, we don't tell people not to combine it with caffeine, but just warn them that it's going to multiply the caffeine as if you took two cups of coffee, but in a bad way, not like a free cup of coffee, but in delivering too much caffeine, which will result in, you know, the subsequent crash. So if you do want to play around with the ketone salts, great, but get the caffeine-free version and then mix that with your coffee or whatnot and isolate the variables so you really know what you're getting. Because some products will only be sold, some ketone products, they only sell them with caffeine because they want people to feel them. And as far as reducing your ketone salt amount, the problem is that the salt load is so large that very little amount of ketone are delivered in these packets. So if you cut it back already, if you cut, you know, one of these ketone packets in half, this is the non-racemic, you cut that in half, then we're talking about, you know, one half of a cap full of KE4. It gets to way.
How long does KE4 last? If I take it at 12 o'clock, is it pretty much done exerting anything effective 4 hours later, 3 hours later, five hours?
Oftentimes people will report 4 or 5 hours later when they're using it for their mind. Now, if you're using it for sport, about 90 minutes is when people find that they need to re-up. But even the tiniest amount. So this is where it's very confusing, and this is where it's biohacking versus science. All the science papers, they take massive quantities of ketone ester, and they take them with glucose, and they're non-ketogenic athletes. So it's just drastically different profile, which is why some of the papers are conflicting. We can touch upon that in a second. But with even a small amount, $5 worth of the amount that you took, which is about $7 worth of ketone ester, taking that before a 1 hour or 2 hour run, it should mathematically, based on the ATP and the calories, it should be burned up in 15 minutes. It should be just gone. But we think that there might be some endogenous signaling because for some reason, they're just not needing the fuel. They're not feeling hungry. And they just say, hey, normally I have a big meal before my 2 hour run, but your protocol said to skip breakfast. You know, how is that possible? But they do it, and then they report that they're not hungry. So running, we found about 90 minutes. Maybe that's because the glycogen storage kind of falls off, so you're only left with one fuel. But people will re-up every hour with a small amount of ketone ester. You don't want to take too much because your blood sugar will drop too much. And even my cousin, I got him to take the ketone ester for a run for the first time, and he said, hey, I run 6 months. I'm like, hey, don't placebo into going too fast. He's like, no, I know my body. And you know, and he wasn't expecting much. And he reported back, I felt horrible. I felt flat. I felt, you know, bad. And I said, he's like, probably was just a bad day. I said, no, that's the ketone ester. And he said, I thought you said this works. I was like, yes, this works when it works. But when it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It makes things worse. Why? Because you're in this constant struggle of glucose versus ketones. It's a food, and one is competing against the other, whether it's a preferred fuel or not. People say ketones are a preferred fuel. Yeah, but in the absence of glucose,
right.
If there's glucose, the glucose wants to butt in. And
In fact, I always thought, and I've said it on this show years ago, probably 7, 8 years ago, that the ideal sports performance supplement would have free-form amino acids and a good whey protein isolate and some amount of like a cyclic dextrin, you know, an advanced type of carbohydrate and ketone esters, because then your body could selectively choose what it wants to run on at that moment. Different tissue may want different things, but it sounds like I'm really off on that, because if you give it everything, it won't work.
Well, there's some parts of what you said that are just really nail it, maybe by accident. So if you're going up a hill, the ketone esters kick in. The type of muscle has more mitochondria, which the ketone ester fuels the mitochondria for that uphill push. And it's not going to be using much of the glucose. So then when you're going downhill and you're, you know, full steam ahead, it's not going to use the ketones. It's going to use the glucose. So in one sense, that might be, you know, a good utilization of putting them together. But the problem with the glucose, even that, you know, the fancier triglucose system, is that it's a dirty fuel. It creates lactic acid, and that will be what impedes performance, whereas ketone ester will decrease the increase, if that makes sense, decrease the increase of lactic acid by 50%. So normally you'll be going up like this, it goes up like this. So what do you do when you have less lactic acid? You don't feel it. You don't notice the difference.
Right.
You just go a little bit faster until you hit that lactic acid threshold. And then they ask you on a survey, you know, did you notice, do you think you were taking ketones or placebo? And they don't notice or feel a difference because they just went faster and they didn't know their numbers because they just went to their, you know, their lactic acid threshold. I think ultimately you might be right. Maybe the dual fuel is where people will end up and they can find, you know, strategic ways to use it, whether it's right before a mountain climb or, you know, avoiding the sprints, because you do need it for sprints. I think it will impair your sprint performance. It'll take you down to 98%, but then it'll allow you to do the sprint longer. So you could be an athlete that changes your strategy. If you normally start, you know, the breakout group, I don't know, 10 miles or whatever the number is before the finish line, you might have to start at 12, 13 miles. You won't be at 100%. You'll be at 99, 98. You'll be lower because you have less glucose.
Right.
But then you'll be able to go faster. But I think ultimately, and hopefully, maybe it's a little bit of a bias, that the ketogenic dieter before many years of science, the ketogenic diet just was proven to get people up to baseline. And that's it. They would dip when they started a ketogenic diet, the athletes, and then they'd get up to baseline. Why? Because they had no fuel source.
Right.
What are they going to do? Just chug some liquid coconut oil? No. So there's this, you know, huge engine with lack of fuel that's able to get to baseline. Well, now they have a compatible fuel source. It's that simple. So now they can actually put the right fuel in that engine, and it's going to make the ketogenic athletes just start ripping away. And some keto athletes resist exogenous ketones because they say, I already make ketones in my blood. I don't need to drink them exogenously. And the number of people that I finally got them to try the ester, and they go, oh, wow. It's exactly like a glucose-based person saying, no, I don't want to have any gel packs before my race. I already have glucose in my system. Like, how silly is that?
Yeah, you're going to burn it up. You're going to burn it up.
So it just adds, you're going to be burning up too much fuel that you can't make enough of the beta-hydroxybutyrate. So taking it exogenously would just give that ketogenic athlete that extra edge. But, you know, the science is very early. We'll see where all of this goes. But I think it's all very, very exciting.
We're gonna take a quick commercial break and come back, wrap up this interview. Later in the show, I'm going to be joined by a meteorologist. Because recently, I made the assertion in a show last week that the weather is strangely wet. I mean, it's an uncharacteristic wet April and May. And it happened to happen at the same time that we had this lockdown, where we know for a fact 25% less CO2 emissions happening over the past couple months globally. China's down 30% for their normal CO2 emissions. Are we seeing changes in the weather because of the lack of air travel, bus travel, car travel, fossil fuel burning? I mean, LA is claiming they've got the cleanest air they've ever had in just 2 months. This little experiment has produced wider scale impact than 10 years of the Green New Deal in just a few months. So I made this assertion, and of course everybody said, Carl, you're an idiot. So I'm going to have a meteorologist join me later in the show to put me in my place or say, you know, there's something to this. So that should be interesting. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Frank Yosa and talking about the Veatch ester. Stay tuned. Ever wish there was a precise way to gauge your recovery from workout to workout? Or wonder if the money you're spending on your nootropic supplements are actually improving brain function? Maybe you're aging and you're noticing some changes in memory. Wouldn't being able to really test your brain be of great value? Well, now you can with great accuracy with the Brain Gauge. The Brain Gauge lets you test essential components of brain health and track your brain health history, and all in the comfort of your own home. Go to gaugeyourbrain.com and use code SHR for $150. $50 off this amazing device. That's gaugeyourbrain.com and SHR for $150 off. You've heard about blood flow restriction training since 2006 on SHR, but you're still on the fence. Well, here's the push. BFR is more effective at building muscle than anabolic steroids. That's right, I went there. But it's because it's the truth. My experience with the B-Strong blood flow restriction system is proof to me. And now I'm asking myself why I waited so long. You'll see undeniable changes in the targeted muscles in days and weeks like nothing you've ever tried before. I will never stop using them. Give B-Strong a try. Go to bstrong.training/super-human and use code SHR for 10% off. Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to RedconOne.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today. Imagine if you had a digital twin, one that you could compare your own health and fitness outcomes to, one that showed you whether or not the things you're doing, foods you're eating, or drinks you're drinking are actually working for you or against you. Well, now you can. The first ever advanced epigenetic saliva test that compares 20 million different data points of your DNA to help predict what is aging you faster or keeping you younger is being introduced to my audience at a 70% discount from the normal price. Go to seeds.md/epigenetic-test today to learn how to get your own digital twin that will help you take the steps to live longer and stay stronger. Don't wait, because this is a limited time offer not available anywhere else. Once these tests are gone, they're gone. Again, go to seeds.md/epigenetic-test today to learn more. I love beef. And if you love beef, listen up. I've discovered the best tasting beef in the world, and that's not an exaggeration, at Piedmontese.com. The Piedmontese breed is famous from Italy for being lean and unbelievably tender, with half the fat and calories of traditional beef. Even typically tough cuts are tender when it comes from the Piedmontese cows. And for the first time ever, Piedmontese cows are being raised here in the USA. Get two free 10-ounce New York strips when you purchase $50 or more at Piedmontese.com with code SHR. Go to Piedmontese.com and use code SHR today. You will never eat any other type of beef ever again.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. We're talking with Frank Yosa today about the Veatch ketone ester, a great addition. You know, presence of ketones in the bloodstream are a good thing, but you can't ignore eating a good diet. In other words, you can't just eat crap and say, well, I'm just going to use ketone esters, and that mitigates all the mistakes I'm making. Not true, right, Frank?
Yeah, it's not an eraser. You can't just eat a cake and follow it up with ketone ester and somehow think that it erases it.
You know, I've been a long-time believer that you could go vegan for a while, but probably long-term requires a lot of thoughtfulness in the diet, because you have to supplement, you have to make sure you're getting some of these things you just wouldn't naturally get from the vegan diet. Without it, I have to believe that ketone esters and of course, eating a vegan diet in a way where you are producing ketones is probably one of the ways that you can mitigate a lot of the potential harmful effects of the vegan diet. Because most people think, as long as I'm not eating animal, I'm vegan, and they're eating crap.
Right, exactly. And I say, what does the carnivore diet have, you know, how does it compare to a raw vegan diet? What do they have in common? Both people will say that it cures this and that. What they both have in common is they both stop eating crap. Like, and it's about stop eating, you know, box food and just junk food. So if they're both not even junk food, it's the junk food. It's not so much whether you're vegan or carnivore. So I don't really talk much about, you know, recommending people go vegan. It just happens to be what works for me. But it's more about not eating crap than it is about
being vegan. No, I agree. And in fact, Ron Penna, really the genius behind Quest Nutrition, often says to me, it's not about what you start eating, it's about what you stop eating. When we look at the magic in dietary alterations, and people go, oh, my autoimmunity went away, and I started eating this. No, no, you stopped eating that.
That's why the watermelon diet works. You just eat watermelon, and it works. But one thing we missed upon that I wanted to try to touch upon before we end, a couple papers. So there's one paper that kind of relates to longevity, and it has to do with they simulated a Tour de France. It's like 7 or 10 days of full out 7-8 hour a day efforts. And half the group had ketone esters and half the group had just a regular diet. And then at the end, they did a time trial and the ketone ester group was 15% faster in the time trial, not 1%, 2%, just a massive,
that's significant.
Massive
improvement. That's significant.
Because of the recovery. And people think of ketone esters as game day. Let's talk about steroids for a second. People don't take steroids on the day of the Super Bowl. They take steroids for the 9 or 10 months leading up to it. It's about the recovery, stupid. So I've been trying to explain to people, maybe even don't even take it game day because it's too, you know, maybe after a while of taking it, you can bring it in game day. But for a long, long time, it's about the recovery, either taking it afterward or even before and making less of that dirty fuel. And there was a second paper where they tested sprinters, and I knew it wouldn't work for the sprinters. I said they might even go slower. I said, test their brains while you're at it. And what they did is they did this iPad quick analysis, and they showed that the placebo group went down. They got dumber towards the end of their sprinting because the fourth quarter quarterback is going to get dumber. The ketone ester group, I thought was going to go down less, or I thought it went down less. And then I found out 6 months after the paper was published, no, it flatlined. The brain was as sharp at the end as it was at the beginning. And that ended up being the headline of the paper, cognitive improvement. So when football players figure out how to do this right and make their fourth quarter as sharp as the first quarter, or even any other athlete that needs mental performance at the end of the game, that's where it's going to be. Not so much the muscles going faster, but your brain. And then that leads me into this recent trial with humans that were age 40 to 70, healthy adults, where they found that there's this concept called the brain energy gap from Steve Cunane, where most people over the age of 70 have a 7% of their brain is not being properly fueled by glucose. They're not getting all the fuel that they need.
Yeah, we started calling that type 3 diabetes on this show before that became a common term today.
Well, the type 3 diabetes, yes, is when that brain energy gap goes even lower, you know, 10, 20, 30%. But just the everyday common person that, you know, might forget their keys, but they're not, you know, an Alzheimer's state. Just the average person has a 7% gap. And what the ketone esters does is it bypasses that blockage. It's a different pathway to reach the brain, and it fills up that gap. It doesn't overclock you like caffeine. It doesn't take you from 100 to 110. So when I take ketone ester, if I take 10 or 15 mLs, I wish I experienced mentally what other people report. I don't. Maybe it's because of my diet. I don't eat crap. I don't eat out of restaurants. I bring my own food on the side. And, you know, if you're at 95, 97%, you're not going to notice that difference. But other people that might be at the 90 or 92, they drink it and it's just like this, you know, parting of the clouds. So it's different for everyone. And it's based, I think, on this brain energy gap that the ketone esters help fill that gap, whether you're a non-keto person or even a keto person.
What about somebody whose parents are starting to experience dementia? Overall, taking a ketone ester like yours, are there any concerns with other issues besides, you know, like I have a good friend whose mom is really deep into dementia right now. I would love to recommend your product. Say, just give her a little capful. Just see if she becomes more lucid. But I don't want her to end up having like palpitations and then it's that, you know. What do you think?
Well, so the FDA precludes us from talking about anything for disease because they don't think that food can help disease.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Even eating the right carrots won't help, you know, eyesight. But we can talk about, you know, people that might be losing their keys or just, you know, not have a little bit of brain fog. And the downsides would be if you took too much. We're talking about, you know, 4 to 5 times more than what one might recommend. Yeah, it can drop your blood sugar too much and make you lightheaded. So that would be one of the downsides. It can make you lose water because it kind of simulates a ketogenic diet, that water flush. You can lose water. So you want to add electrolytes, which ironically, you know, the new drink, you know, indirectly helps with that because it adds back in those electrolytes. But for the most part, you know, aged people are taking it because of, you know, this brain energy gap, and it just, they feel it substantially more than a younger person might. But meanwhile, we do have college students that take it instead of Ritalin. They are actually able to cut out Ritalin, cut out even coffee. People have used ketone esters to replace their caffeine addiction, because I'm not a caffeine friend. Even I don't know where you are in caffeine, but you know, longevity.
I've kicked it. I'm off with caffeine, but it's taken me a long time. I've had a
well, the ketone ester could help you do that in 3 or 4 days, and without the side effects. That's the thing. This one lady said, "Oh, the ketone ester didn't do anything for me," and I, you know, tried to replace my caffeine. Well, what normally happens when you kick your caffeine? Oh, I have brain fog.
Yeah,
I'm lethargic and I'm grumpy. That's it. And you felt nothing. She's like, "Oh yeah." I'm like, "Man, that's success. Like, if that's not success, you know, tough crowd here." So yeah, we have videos on our YouTube channel talking about how to kick caffeine addiction, because even though the papers might say 100,000 people who drank coffee lived longer in this certain country, the fine print says decaf also the people live just as long. So I'm not a fan of caffeine, even though I use it once or twice a week selectively.
I've got Wyatt Everhart waiting in the wings. He's the meteorologist buddy. He's also a friend of the show. He's been listening for years, and he's going to put me in my place about my supposition about the weather and CO2. But before I let you go, the website is ketoneaid.com. You can use the code SHR. You'll get a surprise discount. I'm not allowed to say, but it is a good discount. We're making nothing to have Frank on the show. I just wanted to clear up some of the misunderstandings and misinformation about this particular ester. It was a pleasure talking to you, Frank. I wish you lots of luck.
Thank you very much.
And rock on, brother. Rock on.
All right.
All right, we're going to take one quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by a very handsome guy who spends a lot of his time on real television, and he's going to put me in my place, because I keep claiming that something's going on with the weather, and I'm blaming it on the lockdown. Stay tuned.
Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive. Productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
Hey, this is Carl. For 14 years, you've heard me talk about Can-See eye drops, and they being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at now 61 years old. But I regularly get emails and messages from people who've been using Can-See and having some amazing results. Recently, I got an email from a fellow named Chad, who, because he was on dexamethasone eye drops for over 6 months, developed a cataract. Can-See eye drops actually reduced my cataract to the point where even my doctor has a hard time finding it. I will never stop using Can-See eye drops twice a day. I've been using them since 2008, he says. And you should be too. There is no better way to keep your eyes healthy and seeing clearly than Can-See eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com today and get on board, and we will both be looking into the future with very clear vision. Are you a fan of the low-carb lifestyle? Having trouble getting fat adapted on your keto diet? Feel like your digestion has stalled? Now there's CAPEX. CAPEX increases fat loss and energy on any low-carb, no-carb diet, all while improving digestion. CAPEX boosts AMPK in muscles by 52% and fat cells by 300%. CAPEX increases ATP in your liver by 22%, a key part of energy production, all while revving up the fat-burning hormone adiponectin by a whopping 248%. Nothing works like CAPEX, and now you can get CAPEX for up to 42% off by going to KEnergize.com/SHR and choosing one of the purchase options and using the code SHR. That's KEnergize.com/SHR and code SHR.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Do you remember those delicious toaster pastries you had when you were a kid? You know, the rectangular sugar-filled snacks? Well, guess what? Legendary Foods has just made low-carb toaster pastry. This is the first of its kind, and honestly, these things are amazing. They have 3 to 4 net carb, less than 1 gram of sugar, and 9 grams of protein. You can eat them right out of the wrapper or lightly toast them. The only question is, which flavor? Strawberry or brown sugar cinnamon? They're available at EatLegendary.com and Amazon.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. We're joined by Wyatt Everhart, longtime listener and superhuman, professional meteorologist. Wyatt, you live, do you live in Virginia? No. Where do you live? Baltimore?
Yeah, I'm actually outside of Baltimore, Carl.
And you've been a meteorologist on television for how long now?
I started, out of graduate school, 2000, actually. Yeah, going back to 2000. So,
okay.
20-year run.
So you're a professional meteorologist. This isn't a hobby for you. I just want to establish some credentials here, because last week I made some comments on the show that have gotten some backlash. So I said, you know, I noticed.
You,
I know,
Carl, really?
Yeah, I know, right? Hard to believe. I'm usually so easy to get along with. So, I've been observing the weather the past month, and it seems like it was raining and raining an inordinate amount of time. And I messaged with other people, and my friend Bobby Cooper, who lives in South Carolina, he's like, it's raining all the time over here. And I noticed some things, right? So I have friends that live in different parts of the country, and sometimes I'll call them and I'll look at my NOAA app, which I pay $9 a year for. It's supposed to be better. I have the real-time cloud and projected, you know, rainfall and all that sort of stuff. And I noticed that when the weather passes over Kentucky, it comes from the west. And then it makes a turn and goes up northeast. And usually the weather that I experience here in Kentucky hits my buddy Joey and my daughter in New York a day or so later. Pretty, I mean, it's really very, very regular. It's like, and you call it the wind stream, right? Just boom, boom. But the past couple months, I've noticed a phenomenon. It's not moving. The wind stream doesn't look like it's moving anything. In fact, the cloud cover that I see on my NOAA app, instead of making that traditional west to east to northeast path, it's just hanging over Kentucky. It's just hanging over Texas. It's just hanging over Maryland. And it's just kind of like the clouds are just swirling around. They have no direction. They're just hanging everywhere. And on top of that, I look at my app. It's like, I've never seen my app say, the next 8 days, it's rain. And 8 days after that, it's rain. And the 8 days before that, it's rain. And I'm going, what's going on here? And then I'm thinking to myself, we've been locked down. Now, we know air travel is down. We know car travel is down. We know bus travel is down. We know that fossil fuel burning is down. We have cities like L.A. saying they have the cleanest air they've ever had in recorded time in the past couple months, just from this lack of people driving. Global emissions of CO2 are down. China, they're reporting that new CO2 emissions coming out of China are down by almost 30%. Now, this is phenomenal, because we had the Green New Deal that was supposed to reduce CO2 emissions percentages a year over the course of a decade. And in the past 3 months, we've dropped globally like almost 30%. So I said, I wonder if this has anything to do with this crazy weather. And what if the whole the CO2 is making the weather crappy is wrong? What if the lack of the CO2 is actually making the weather crappy now? And of course, I got a lot of fallout from that. So I come to you and I say, put me in my place. What did I get wrong? What did I get wrong?
Look, I mean, a couple things, Carl. First, thanks for having me on. I mean, long time, huge fan of the show, so it's cool that I could contribute in some way as a weather guy, right? And we talked about this a little bit offline that, a lot of us that train are training outdoors now. And so I think we're more cognizant of the weather than we ever have been, you know, when we kind of depend on it to break cabin fever and can't get in the gym, at least not in Maryland or around this area. So, look, a couple of things. It's time perspective, right? What we see in the span of a week or even the span of several weeks, you really can't draw much correlation out right to months, seasons, years. Two summers ago, way before COVID, the mid-Atlantic states here, I mean, we had the wettest stretch of months. Maryland, by like 10 inches, had our wettest year ever on record. It rained like every day all summer. So it's hard to tie a stretch of weeks or months and make big conclusions from that.
Okay.
What I would tell you is that there's no question, because just curiosity, I mean, you dig into it and you say, I wonder what, man, you know, it's like the first thing I saw with COVID-19 was they started to lock down the D.C. Baltimore area, and you would go on your like Google traffic map, and there's like, for instead of red all over the place at rush hour, it's like green. There's right. like no cars on the road, even now. That's a huge impact. Everything from smog locally, you know, we have the bluest skies I've ever seen over Baltimore this time of year when we have a clear day. There's just no smog around the city. On the other hand, you know, CO2, to your point, overseas, China went first, right, with all this. And they were one of the biggest emitters. And the maps before and after, 2 months later, it's like incredible. They've studied it in the States, too, the difference before and after COVID. Because most of these emissions are driven by vehicular traffic, you know, trucks on the road, cars on the road, airplanes.
You got nobody in the factories working. The factories aren't putting out any CO2.
Yeah, it's a shock to the environment, right? Because you look at it's almost like maybe not the perfect analogy, but the stock market. It was a shock to the market, yes. right, when everything shut down. It's like I think we have shocked the atmospheric system a bit. Suddenly, you know, it's almost like the Earth was processing for not just years, but decades, certain amount of carbon on a steady basis, day after day, month after month. And suddenly we like turned it off. So there's no question that there can be impact from that. I think you even made a comment I saw on Facebook about just releasing heat. I mean, that was something I studied in grad school.
Radiant heat. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on a local level, there's something called the urban heat island effect, like in your L.A., New York, D.C., even like a city like Louisville, closer to you. There's a certain amount of heat on summer afternoons just from vehicular activity, engine heat, you know. But I don't think we can say that this is going to change things in any big way. I mean, there's been a debate for, you know as well as I do, years, you know, is climate change. I mean, the first
man-made,
argument was,
is man affecting climate? There are those who say no. There are those who say yes. But one thing's for sure. Here's what I have thought a lot about.
Sure.
I don't think we need anything as restrictive as the Green New Deal to truly remove some of the CO2 from our climate. I think that if once a quarter, every company made their employee work from home for 1 week, that alone, if we did that four times a year, just seeing what's happened in the past couple months, what do you think?
Well, I just had this conversation not long ago. A good friend of mine is a meteorologist. A lot of us weather guys know each other. It's a pretty small business. I mean, there's like 12 weather guys per U.S. city. You know, if you think about it, three, four stations, three, four guys a station. And we talk sometimes offline. And, I definitely think that we never go back, right? Like, I don't just, this is, you know, neither here nor there, but I don't think we ever go back exactly. Even if they come up with a vaccine, the traffic grid is never going to be the same again. I mean, there's certain companies
that
are looking
at this
and saying, yeah. But certain companies are saying, wait a minute, we are getting production from work at home workers, at least some of them, some days a week, whatever it is. I think less gridlock, less traffic, and just less pollution would just be a good thing.
We got a sponsor that may be coming aboard. They sell ergonomic chairs and desks for home because they're saying like employers are going, maybe we don't need all these office spaces. Maybe we can start having more people work from home. Look at how productive we've been. And that, you know, like restaurants just opened in here in Louisville. Well, there's no menus. What they have is they have one of those, What's that little CR code? What are they, or QR code?
Oh, right, like a QR code or something like that.
They have a QR code on a couple spots, and you take a picture of it, and you look at your menu. And I thought, this is brilliant, because why would you ever go back to a printed menu? You could literally make a change on the menu in the morning. Oh, you got a shipment of monkfish from Canada, and it's like you put it on the menu that morning. The menu changes. It's dynamic. You don't have a printed document anymore. Well,
I mean, the technology that's coming out of this is just, it's look, even if once the virus is gone, and even if they never have a vaccine, and you think 1918, they never did, but eventually we kind of just pulled out of that. But it's like it'll never be the same again, right?
And that's technology- and so when people say that, Wyatt, they almost say it with a wistful, like, sadness. I'm like, things will never be the same again, because you know what's happening? We're cutting the fat everywhere. We're going, hey, we never needed that anyway. Let's get rid of it now. We didn't maybe need paper menus.
Maybe there's a better way. I mean, are any of us going to miss going into like a breakfast diner and you get one of those menus and there's like pieces of egg still on it from the last guy that they didn't get when they wiped it off? I mean, we're going to catch less colds and flus most years, probably, just because
I bet grocery stores continue to have people who wipe down the carts, and that's probably going to be something that's going to stay. We're not going to see menus anymore. More people are going to work from home, and industry is going to benefit from it. The environment's going to benefit from it. I actually think so. I've said on this show, and I know people don't like when I say this, that this is the human cull virus. It goes after the weakest in our population. If we looked at this from if we were looking at animals, deer, bear, oh yeah, got rid of all the sick and old bears. And so now we have this renaissance of healthy, strong bears, right? So this virus is taking everything that's weak, and actually from a standpoint of commerce and stuff, everything that's not necessary anymore, that we've been doing, that we realize now we don't have to do, we don't need that anymore. This virus is actually going to, when the plague went through Europe, we saw a renaissance, because all of the people that it killed were really the non-contributors. They were the people that lived in the cities, in the slums. You know, they weren't really contributors to society. They're the ones that ended up getting killed. I know people are going to say, Carl, this is a horrible thing to say, but this is the truth. I'm just looking at history. Whenever we have these types of things, there's usually a renaissance. Now, we're not going to have a renaissance because a lot of people died, but we're going to have a renaissance because a lot of things that we did a certain way, because that's the way we did it, we're going, oh, we don't have to do that anymore. We found a better way.
Well, and like anything, any shock to the planet, unfortunately, there's always winners and losers. This virus really seems to target that older population. I mean, gosh, it's been horrible to see what's happened in places like some of the nursing homes it's gotten into and things like that. But then you say, I mean, just big picture, you try to find, okay, that's the dark side, and it is very dark in all of this. And of course, the economic impact is going to take a while to repair that. That's very dark for many people. But on the bright side, I just say, as a meteorologist, you know, what if traffic never gets back? The emissions never go back to maybe, let's say, 60-70% of what they were pre-COVID. I mean, I've always said that what gets missed in the whole climate change thing about emissions and electric vehicles and solar and whatever else is, it really should be pollution. Like when you cut those emissions, you and I, you see smog with your own two eyes. Your truck goes by when you're outside running, or you're doing your
you're breathing it in.
You suck it in, and that's just something that weakens the lungs. So it's just people get lung cancer that never smoked. What is that all about? So to me, you know, if we can have just as a side effect of all this, just, you know, less emissions, less pollution. I've always said clean air and clean water shouldn't be political. I mean, everybody should want cleaner air and cleaner water. So,
And people can continue to argue about whether we're causing climate change or not, but I think you're spot on with this. We can all agree that less pollution is a good thing for everybody. And I really do think that we're going to end up with an environment where we are polluting less, because we're learning that we didn't need to do these things that we were doing before.
Yeah, and you say, okay, the downside would be if I own commercial lease space, okay, maybe I'm going to lose some tenants and all this, and that whole thing is going to change. But the bright side would be from a mental health thing even. In D.C. area, Baltimore area, Carl, people have 1, sometimes 2 hour commutes each direction before COVID.
Yes.
That's really that just takes a toll on your mentality.
Well, look at the wasted productive. You know, when I lived in New York, I used to take the A train into the city. I used to take it home. I spent an hour and a half, sometimes an hour and a half each way. I would use that time to read and stuff like that. But let's be honest, if I could literally walk out my back door and be at work, I'd rather do that and read sitting under the sun than sitting in a subway tunnel somewhere.
Yeah, no, I think it's just from a mindset, like to your point, a home office. I mean, you've got a great studio there and you've had it for a while. But for me, I do a lot. I've got my, first thing I did when all this happened, I got the external monitor and I'd been meaning to set all that up. And many of my friends in the same thing, their home office is in peak condition now. So there's just going to be a lot more of that,
I think it's great. I think there's a lot of good things that are going to come out of this. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. But I do agree with you that the short-term effects of this blip may not be able to be assessed, but maybe a couple years from now, we will be able to see something. And I have a funny feeling that when we look back at this 3 months and we look at the stratification of climate and we look at the stratification of pollution, we're going to go, wow, look what happened for those 3 months. Now we just have to do that 2 or 3 times a year and combine that with the fact that 40% less people are actually going to work. They're working from home. This is going to actually make us more efficient and cut back on waste that's actually causing the planet a lot of distress. I don't care where you stand on, are we causing climate change? Aren't we? We can all agree that, and I like that. I like what you said. We can all agree that less pollution is a good thing for all of us.
Yeah, and I think if we can come out of the other end of this and steadily bring the economy back, but realize maybe we didn't have to do as much emissions and unnecessary driving, and then we do more like we're doing this right now, if that means we all get to breathe some cleaner air and spend a little less time stuck in traffic,
that's a good thing. So, yeah. But real quick before we wrap this up, are you seeing a wetter April and May this year than you've seen in a while?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we've got is a, and you got to remember, Carl, because I know you're worldwide, but also U.S. wide, right? So, the West Coast, when typically we're in the East here, and we from Kentucky all the way over to Maryland, wetter than normal. The last 2 months, unseasonably cool. I mean, we were setting record low temperatures here in Baltimore just a week or so ago. The timing is interesting. But remember, that's the upper air pattern. If the jet stream's ridging in the west, and what we could have is just a very hot pattern out there. So it's tough to, again, we always have to be specific down to what area people are watching from. But there's no doubt if you're watching from the East Coast or even the Midwest, cooler, wetter than normal. I hope we break out of this because I know a lot of us have cabin fever and want to get out in the sun, get the vitamin D levels up that you always talk about.
And ride our new motorcycles. So, did you see that the ozone, there was a hole in the ozone that's been, it closed up in the past couple months.
Yeah. I mean, that's really been a separate, that's been a phenomenon that goes back, right. And that was always separate kind of from the whole CO2 and climate thing. A lot of progress has been made there. That was a lot of to do with the types of, chemicals that were being released, but it takes decades. That's my last point about this. Remember, even if we cut the carbon, I think some of the experts say, that you really have a sustained impact on global temperatures, right? Even if you want to say some of this is natural cycle and natural warming, man enhances it, if you believe 97% of the scientists. And so to influence how much we're kind of nudging it along, we probably have to cut CO2, 20-25% over a period of years, if not decades. So this, in the big picture, this will just be a blip. But there's no doubt. I think it was a shock to the environment to suddenly have. I mean, look. One last thing about it, Carl. You've seen the types of wild animals that have come out, and just nature trying to reclaim.
Right.
We've seen animals around my neighborhood we've never seen.
Right.
So. Interesting.
Very, very cool. Wyatt, man, thanks for being here, and thanks for being a fan of the show for so long, too.
Hey, thank you, Carl. Appreciate it, man. Keep on rocking. And, you know, I'll always going to be a listener here. So
thank you, brother. Talk to you soon. All right. We're going to wrap up the show now. This has been a fantastic show. Hope you learned something. Again, if you go to ketoneaid.com and use the code SHR, I can't tell you the discount because there's a lot of people out there who make money selling this product. And so Frank has to protect them, and I respect that. I'm not asking for any money from him. I just wanted to talk about the Veatch Ester since it is becoming more and more popular. So you can save a surprise amount of money. I think you'll be surprised by how much you save by using the code SHR. So check that out. And we will see tomorrow. The guys from Piedmontese.com are coming on. I love this beef, and everybody who buys it tells me, Carl, I've never tasted beef this good. And there's a reason. This beef is genetically superior to any beef you've ever eaten, and we're going to talk about the science behind that tomorrow. The Piedmontese breed is a breed that was bred specifically to be the way it is. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for listening today. Don't forget, share the show. Check out the YouTube channel, youtube.com/superhumanradio. Subscribe, please. Help us become a bigger influence on people's health. See you tomorrow. Thank you.